have to do, as they were the only ones here. The data he'd been given definitely hadn't said anything about a black dragon in London itself. They had to stop it. As he came closer, he realized this wasn't just any black dragon. It was larger than any he'd ever seen. He fought back a surge of fear and kicked his eagle into even faster flight. A quick gesture of his spellshooter to the left and then the right, and two wyverns flew past. He aimed and fired at the creatures, covering them with a shimmering mist that he hoped would camouflage them well. Alex was close enough now to hear even the dark elf rider screaming. He seemed to have gone almost berserk with rage. He squinted and pulled out his spyglass, causing the scene to come into sharp focus.
What the?
It was Lord Cranathor, a high-ranking dark elf of royal blood. From what Alex remembered, he was a cousin to Saktar himself.
Now you will die, humans!
Cranathor screamed, spittle flying from his lips. He stood in his stirrups, gazing balefully over the crest of his black dragon as its fires raked back and forth over the remains of the foolish Institute warriors who had dared to stand against him. He began drawing power to himself, summoning his magic into his hands and building a large orb of crackling purple energy. He would hurl that down upon the main cabin of the largest group of humans left alive, shattering any remaining resistance in one fell swoop. But even as he started to raise his hands and their volatile cargo, Cranathor swooned. A strange wave of despair washed over him. He felt suddenly drained of energy, and an emptiness opened up inside him. And then he knew.
No!
He screamed, the orb falling apart as his concentration fled.
My king!
Their king, the mighty Saktar, was no more. He would make them pay for this. How could it be? Some unknown power must exist to be able to take down King Saktar. But he knew it must be true. All the royal family were linked to the king, so they would know immediately when a new one needed to take on the helm. He narrowed his eyes, mind already whirring. If Iktid had fallen as well, then it wasn't out of the question that Cranathor himself could. A strange hum cut through his thoughts and drew Cranathor's attention. He glanced down and saw that what he thought was just a cloud was in fact something quite unsettling. As Cranathor stared, the faint outlines of a flying creature appeared, growing more distinct with each passing second. He could make out details now, including the swords and spellshooters in each figure's hand, and the hooded rope cloaking the lead figure, long hair whipping in the wind, and a slightly mad grin on his face.
"Surprise!"
Alex shouted, as he and his unit dropped the illusion that had been shielding them. He closed in fast, his diamond formation swinging around and covering the huge dragon. Just as they closed in, a barrage of heavy gunfire came from below, distracting the great dragon from them. The captain was doing his part, and Alex couldn't let an opportunity like that pass unused. While his unit targeted the dragon's wings, he urged his great eagle right at Lord Cranathor. He met the dark elf's stare, which widened in recognition, and then he did what no one, least of all himself, had expected. He threw himself off his eagle, straight into Cranathor. Knocked out of the saddle, together they slid across the dragon's back. Alex grappled with the dark elf, who was screaming endlessly in his own language.
Oh, shut up!
Alex finally got his spellshooter out of his holster, just as the powerful elf managed to face him, and with a shout, they both attacked. The power collided and rebounded in opposite directions, throwing them both straight off the black dragon into the yawning darkness below. Zadaya was down to his last spell, an airsoft designed to provide a soft landing if you fell from a great height or jumped. Sighting down the barrel, he fired his spellshooter at a dark elf in mid-leap towards them, and, under other circumstances, certainly would have laughed as his attacker suddenly began to drift away, trapped in mid-air by the innocent little spell. But Zadaya didn't feel much like laughing right now. He had been sent to the front on the border of Scotland and England, and the fighting had been brutal.
I'm out, he told his remaining spell swords and wardens. Anyone got anything?
All around him, the others shook their heads. They were all bloody, battered and sore, and it felt as if this day had gone on forever. Well, for better or worse, it probably wouldn't last much longer. He still wouldn't give the Dark Elves the satisfaction of having an easy time of it, though. Instead, he took a deep breath,
straightened, and even as he sheathed his spellshooter, he raised his sword. All right, you lot, he shouted, fighting to project as much composure and confidence as possible. We're out of spells, we're pinned down, and there are at least 3 times more of them than there are of us. I'd like to say that backup is coming, but frankly, you all know that we were the backup. He mustered a weak grin. Not the most inspiring pep talk, I know, but hey, it's been one of those days. That got a wave of half-hearted chuckles, which was better than nothing. Zadaya let the humor fade from his voice and face. Use your swords, he reminded them quietly. Use your fists. Hell, use your heads if it comes to that. When this day is done, any of them who are left, and it'll be a lot fewer than there are now, I'll tell you that much, will know they've been in a fight. They may defeat us, but I promise you, they will never forget us. All around him, his spell swords and wardens shook off their fatigue and injuries and roared agreement. If he had to die today, at least he would do so surrounded by people he felt proud of, fighting for what they believed in. Raising his sword high, Zadaya turned towards the horde of dark elves just now breaching the intersection between this street and the wider ones back beyond. For the Institute! He shouted at the top of his lungs, and his wardens echoed the cry. For Elizabeth! And he charged one final time into the fray. The dark elves met them head-on with a crash. These weren't their strongest forces, but the numbers were on their side. Elves with long pikes pushed forwards, and Zadaya moved smoothly between two, hamstringing one and running the other through. He yanked his sword free and blocked a thrust that would have taken out a spellsword to his right. They fought back to back, and their foes attacked and died. But taking down 3 times their number didn't matter, as the elves just continued coming. Zadaya had a brief burst of hate for his dark cousins. So much needless killing for what? He threw himself into the fray again, attacking ferociously, until suddenly he realized he had gotten cut off from the remainder of his team. His fighting became desperate now, hacking and slashing back towards his own troops. He knew it was only a matter of time. As he deflected another attack, just managing to keep the pike from his guts, Zadaya suddenly heard a deep, guttural roar. It came from somewhere nearby, the early morning fog making it difficult to see anyone at all. Wherever it was getting closer. Then a stocky, powerful figure burst from the fog, bellowing wordlessly as it slammed full force into one of the dark elves, bowling the enemy warrior off his feet before cutting him down with a large, heavy, wicked-looking axe. Several more men and women emerged right behind him, each laying into the dark elves with vigor. Their clothing was not only tattered and torn, but evidently singed, and many bore wounds, but they engulfed the dark elves like a wave falling upon the shore, sweeping over and through the shocked elves and flowing in to surround Zadaya and his men. Then the figure with the axe stepped forwards, and Zadaya gasped as he finally recognized the other's sour expression and craggy features. Draven! The warden director paused beside him, leaning on the haft of his axe. Thank the stars! Draven offered up a tight, weary half-smile.
Glad you're still here, Zad, he replied. I was afraid we'd have to head back empty-handed.
Up close, he could see that the senior warden was covered in cuts, scrapes, bruises, and deep, nasty burns. In fact, much of the man's face, chest, and arms were blackened from fire. What had the director gotten himself into?
Still here, sir, Zadaya confirmed. It's been rough, but seems like we've been having a tea party compared to your lot.
I don't know about that. You lads have done well.
Draven let out a deep, wheezing sigh. But in the middle of speaking, the warden director froze, and then suddenly crumpled. Zadaya caught him before his head hit the ground. Draven felt heavy and unresponsive in his arms, his chest barely rising with each weak breath.
The director is down, Zadaya shouted. We need to protect him. Close ranks.
At once, his unit dropped everything else to surround the two of them. Carefully laying Draven on the ground out of harm's way, Zadaya rose to his feet, but not before taking his superior spell shooter. There were still spells within it, and he knew the warden director would approve of his using them, especially if it might save both their lives. Fully armed once more, he joined his team.
They all faced outwards, weapons up and ready, as the Dark Elves advanced once more. There were an awful lot of Dark Elves, but with the newly reinforced troops at his disposal, it would be a far more even fight. Zadiah found himself filled with hope. He wasn't sure why, but he could sense that something had changed, and it wasn't just the miraculous arrival of friends when they thought it was all over. He could see it on his dark cousins' faces. Their steely confidence was breaking, and even though he didn't know why, Zadiah would use that vulnerability any way he could. Chapter 36. The High Council Revealed. Ben opened his eyes and tried to remember where he was. He ached from head to toe, and there was a dark round thing over him. Someone seemed to be almost lying on top of him, and he pushed weakly. Getting a bit of strength back, he pushed a bit harder and felt something large slide off the top of whatever was over his head. Some light shone through and lit a familiar face, and suddenly Ben remembered what had happened. Joshua had somehow managed to wedge the shield between them and the collapsing ceiling before they had both passed out.
Josh. Josh!
He nudged the other boy and then shook him a bit. Joshua groaned and opened his eyes.
What?
Suddenly, his gaze came into sharp focus. He looked around tensely, and then relaxed.
It's over, then.
Ben just nodded numbly. He couldn't believe it was over. Neither of them were glowing anymore, but he could see Joshua's wound had closed up. He himself just felt horrible, but nothing beyond an intense ache in his muscles. They climbed out of the space they had huddled in, now surrounded by rock and stone fragments of all sizes. They walked over to where they remembered Suktar's body being and looked around. All the soldiers were either dead or gone, leaving the large space shattered and empty of life.
Ben? Where's the body? Josh asked.
Ben was getting a little worried himself.
I'm sure it was here.
They started searching around, Joshua muttering to himself.
You've got to be kidding me. Really, you've got to be kidding. I guess one of the Dark Elf soldiers took it, yeah? That must be it. Give him a proper burial and all that.
Suddenly, Ben gave a shout of surprise. Joshua ran over immediately and gave a cry himself. Together, they gently pulled stone and rock away. Joshua leant down, carefully lifted Abigail, and carried her over to a clean spot. She wasn't moving. Tears welled up in Josh's eyes, the unfairness of it all clearly hitting him hard. Ben felt a lump in his throat. He couldn't stop wondering if there could have been any other way to have achieved what they had, any way to have Abigail still with them. Suddenly, her eyes fluttered and slowly opened. Ben stared in shock, hardly daring to hope. Abigail focused on them both, finally settling her glance on Joshua.
Hello, boys.
She placed a hand on Joshua's cheek, and he let out a muffled sob. Ben barked a near hysterical laugh.
How in the world?
They both leaned in and gave her a huge hug. When they'd settled down again, Joshua making the space as comfortable as possible for Abigail, she told them what had happened.
I became one with the helm. It was the strangest feeling ever, but somehow I knew that if I was going to access the full power we needed, I had to let the helm take over completely. I became it, and it became invisible. I wanted to tell you both, but I had to use all my will just to stay focused and not lose myself.
Ben glanced at Joshua, who looked as impressed as he felt.
Abigail, honestly, we had no chance without you. None at all.
She beamed up at him. Then he remembered what they'd been doing before finding her.
Abigail, we thought we'd beaten Suktar. I mean, I was so sure.
He looked around again, but his body... She cut him off.
Don't worry. You did beat him. No one that powerful leaves much in the way of remains when they die. Their bodies are just a shell, really, holding in all that magic. When Suktar passed away for real, it was all released out of him and then disappeared back into the earth. I felt it happen before the ceiling fell on me. She smiled again.
Ben heaved a sigh of relief. He forced himself to stand up, dragging the sword with him, and then something grabbed his attention. The sword seemed different somehow. He held it out in front of him to look closer.
Josh, pull out the shield, would you?
Abigail also placed the helm next to them. Something was different. Somehow. As they watched, the weapons faded and then turned to dust. The dust began swirling together, and in the middle a light formed. From outside, two streams of dust flew in and merged with the rest, more light coming together and then redistributing until it formed a vaguely humanoid shape. The three friends stepped back a few paces, spell shooters at the ready. The light intensified and then softened, leaving behind a relatively young-looking but incredibly beautiful elf. Her hair was like spun silver, her eyes a piercing bright blue. She looked at each of them in turn, then focused on Ben.
Ben Greenwood.
When she spoke, her voice seemed to come from everywhere at once, and it had a softness like silk. She smiled, and he felt his face flush. It wasn't right that anyone could be that beautiful.
You have freed me.
She moved forwards gracefully, gliding over the floor like she was floating. Ben tried to swallow and briefly looked at his two friends, who wore identical looks of shock.
I'm not sure what you mean, miss, but if I'm not mistaken, you were a piece of armour a minute ago. Before I totally freak out, a quick explanation would be splendid.
She gave a musical laugh, and Ben almost rolled his eyes. Could there be anything about her that wasn't, well, perfect?
Yes, Ben. That's what I mean. It was my power that the High Council used for the armour. Hundreds of years ago, they caught me unawares.
A flicker of something crossed her face, then was gone.
My awareness was split into five parts, and the only thing I knew was that I had to end one of them. In truth, any of the High Council would have worked, but they directed you to Saktar. He wasn't part of the Council itself anymore, but he still had the magic they had invested in him, so ultimately it worked the same. It was almost a perfect spell, actually. Killing Saktar would have returned my power to the High Council, keeping me enslaved to be used again.
Ben was having trouble taking all this in.
Okay, but I did kill him, and you're... well, you don't look very enslaved to me.
She laid a gentle hand on his arm, and he felt his face flush anew.
Indeed. My young hero, I'm not, and that is because you killed him, not I. You somehow pulled yourself out of the enchantment and made the decision yourself. An act such as this was the only way I could be free, and none of the High Council thought it would ever happen.
That look came into her eyes again, and this time Ben did take a step back. He couldn't let her beauty distract him. Anyone that it took the entire High Council to enslave was not someone he cared to mess with.
Well, you're welcome.
He looked at Joshua, who was staring at the elf, and at Abigail, who was watching Joshua with an annoyed look on her face. Ben nudged him, and he blinked a few times before realizing what he'd done and smiling sheepishly. Abigail sniffed loudly.
Ben,
the elf stated,
because of what you've done, I am in your debt. The fact that you did it without intending to help me directly only makes the debt more powerful. If you need anything strongly enough in the future, you only have to come and ask. Come and find the Wild, and she will grant you what you need. For now, Know that the High Council are not done here. Your friends still need you.
She reached out to touch his spell shooter, which glowed and shifted as a familiar white energy flowed into it, a similar power to that seen in Elizabeth's armor. Ben looked at it in amazement. It had changed shape slightly, looking now like an ebony version of his original, but more sleek, more elegant. It somehow looked a whole lot more deadly. Smiling slightly, she began to fade, her soft whisper fading with her.
Find the Wilder, Ben, if ever you need help.
And she was gone. Ben let out a breath he didn't realize he'd been holding.
That was by far the weirdest experience I've ever had. And honestly, that's saying a lot.
Joshua came over to look at his spell shooter.
Mate, what did she do? I've never seen anything like it, and I've been pretty much obsessed with spell shooters my whole life.
Abigail wasn't quite so impressed.
Huh, you were both practically drooling. I didn't know boys were so attracted to a suit of armour.
Ben smiled as Joshua attempted to make excuses, each one lamer than the last. For a second he thought maybe Joshua and Abigail. Shaking his head, he remembered what her last words were.
Let's go, guys, he suggested. It sounds like even though we've taken out the big bad guy, there are still other people fighting.
Together, they started jogging back the way they had come. After a few minutes, Ben ground to a halt and turned to Abigail.
I hope you remember the way, because I'll be honest, everything is a bit of a haze from between when we got into the palace and when I woke up 20 minutes ago.
Thankfully, Abigail still had a clear picture of the corridors in her mind.
Follow me,
she instructed, and took off at a full run. Ben and Josh were right behind her, and none of them so much as paused as she took each twist, turn, and intersection at top speed. It was eerily empty and quiet, until half an hour later they finally heard the sounds of fighting up ahead. They all drew their spell shooters, Ben's gleaming, despite it being a deep black. As they rounded the corner, they walked right into a scene of total destruction. There were bodies everywhere, and large chunks had been blown out of the walls. The prince was still there, battered and streaked with blood, but alive. Ren stood with him back to back. Ben glanced about, but couldn't see Dagmar.
It's over,
Prince Robert bellowed at Iktid, even as he fired an ice spear into the chest of a charging dark elf.
Your king is dead, and you know it. I felt it, which means you must have too. Surrender now and live, or continue to fight and die.
The dark elf prince didn't seem that worried.
Don't be ridiculous. You are in the middle of my homeland. Just because you have somehow managed to end my father's life, you think you will leave here alive?
Ren seemed to be trying to tell the prince the same thing, pulling him back a bit. Ben walked in at that point, his friends behind him.
Well, if it isn't young Greenwood.
Despite the dark elf prince's bland tone, his eyes flared with intense rage.
Since you apparently murdered my father, I'm going to make absolutely sure yours dies a horrible death.
He smiled, but it didn't touch his eyes. Ren saw them and waved them away.
Get out of here. We will deal with this.
Shaking his head, Ben moved closer.
I don't think so.
As he walked, he noticed out of the corner of his eye Dagmar's body up against a nearby pillar, head lolling lifelessly. He blocked it out for now, focusing on what was in front of him.
You act all brave, like you've got all these soldiers at your side. Let's be honest with each other, shall we? You and your kind really aren't well loved by your people. I'm pretty sure they'll be partying in the streets when they find out the great dictator has been removed.
It was Ben's turn to smile, and with just as little mirth. He raised his spell shooter, and Iktid's eyes opened wide.
How did you...
Before Ben or the others could do anything, he raised his hand. A jet of blue light shot out from behind a nearby column, creating a barrier between them. Ben moved forwards fast, but could only get so close. He stared hard, and could just about make out a tall, robed person with Iktid. Ben thought the person turned to look at him briefly,
before a glow lit up from behind the blue barrier. When it faded, they were gone. A few moments later, the barrier vanished as well. Ben turned around to face Wren and the prince, who were looking at him. He noticed Wren's eyes flick towards his spell shooter before settling on his face. He quietly holstered it, certain that it would be a conversation for another day. Before he could be asked any questions, he had a few of his own, which he addressed to both Wren and the prince.
"What just happened there? I didn't think that type of magic was possible."
The prince looked troubled, and he and Wren shared a look before nodding to each other.
"It's not to most people," Robert confirmed. "But there is a collection of the most powerful wizards, witches and warlocks, known as..."
Ben cut him off, stating with cold certainty,
"The High Council."
The prince stopped in surprise.
"Yes, how do you..." "Actually, no. I'm going to stop asking that. Let me just continue and pretend you didn't say anything."
He had a wry smile on his face. Ben realized the prince seemed a lot lighter than before, somehow. Most likely with the armor finally gone, he felt a great relief, even if he didn't realize it.
"The High Council, as I was saying,"
he arched an eyebrow, "is a collection of the most powerful humans, elves, dwarves, and so on, around. They're rarely seen by anyone, but seem to have a hand in things a little too often. It looks like they have reasons for keeping Iktid alive." He shared another look with Wren, who gave him a meaningful one back. It was Wren who asked finally,
"Ben, where is the armor? I noticed the boots have gone, but I thought maybe someone took them while we were otherwise engaged. But now I see you and Joshua."
Ben simply shrugged.
"Gone. After we... I... killed Suktar. They all just kind of turned into dust. Then there was a sort of intense white light, and then it vanished too."
He looked at Joshua and raised his eyebrows. Joshua nodded.
"Yeah, I guess once its use was over, that was that."
His friend clearly didn't know why Ben wasn't telling the whole truth. But when you went through something like they just had, you tended to trust one another. They would talk about it later for sure. But for now, Abigail and Joshua seemed like they would roll with it. The prince was frowning, but when he spoke, Ben was relieved.
"Again, the High Council. They give us such a powerful weapon, only to take it away. Then they spirit-icked it from us. It is as we thought. They play a different game."
He shook his head, but the frown was gone as quickly as it had come. The prince's previous obsession with the armor definitely didn't seem to be there anymore. Wren turned back to Ben.
"Ben, the fact that Iktid is gone doesn't change what you did. He is nowhere near as powerful as Suktar was, and doesn't have the backing of a nation, as you correctly pointed out. We also know, for the first time ever, to really watch out for the High Council."
Ben took the praise quietly, and let his gaze drift to what he had been avoiding. He forced himself to move over to Dagmar's hauntingly still body. He already knew she must be past help, or Wren would have done something. He knelt next to her and felt her pulse, and then he saw the hole that had been blasted in her chest. He thought he'd cry, but somehow, instead, he just felt numb. So many people had died, he felt drained of tears. He stood up and saw them all looking at him. Joshua had Abigail's head against his chest as she sobbed. The prince spoke, sincere respect in his voice.
"She saved us both more times than I can count. It was Iktid who had to stop her in the end, as none of the others could. For her own courage and her ability in teaching you, able young people, she will be honored."
Ben could only nod his head.
What good did being honored do when you were dead?
Wren seemed to understand, judging by that look in her eyes she sometimes had. Ben didn't want any sympathy, however. He didn't think he could take it. They had won, hadn't they? Then why did he feel so wretched? His gloomy thoughts were cut off, however, by the sound of footsteps approaching.
Out of one of the corridors came a sprinting, gasping Charlie. Okay, don't panic, we're here. He spun around with his spell shooter, aimed one way, then the next, until he finally realized the room was empty. What the... he muttered, lowering the weapon. I thought I'd bring, well, you know, the backup. The sight of his friend brought a surge of warmth into Ben's chest, and he couldn't stop the smile from breaking across his face. Then Ben saw them. It was something that he had been dreaming of every day and night for the last few years, ever since that day he had come to his house to find them gone.
Mum! Dad!
He didn't care what the others might think. He ran and embraced them both and cried unashamedly, his parents doing the same. He was dimly aware of Joshua with his own father. He let it all out and felt a rush of happiness so strong it banished the grief of losing so much, at least for now. Just for a few moments, he had his parents again, and everything was okay. Chapter 37. The Institute Prevails.
That's it!
Alex shouted, leaning in close enough to feel feathers tickling his cheeks as his great eagle cawed and flew in fast pursuit.
We've got them on the run!
The Dark Elf forces, what was left of them, had broken off their attacks and begun to scatter. Dragons and wyverns and other creatures turning this way and that as the remnants of that once massive army lost all cohesion and order. The battalion of armed flyers Alex and his unit had been tasked to stop over the outskirts of London had already crumbled away, leaving no clear leaders and each survivor out for himself. He and his team, despite working on almost no sleep, continued through the day and night, swooping in and picking off the demoralized dark elves one by one. As far as he was concerned, he wouldn't stop until there wasn't one Dark Elf soldier on English soil. Just as Alex trained his mount on a Dark Elf straggler on a clearly wounded cockatrice, his amulet began to emit a soft, pulsing glow. Sighing with fatigue as much as annoyance, Alex tugged gently on the reins, causing his great eagle to give up the chase and hover over an empty patch of water on the Thames. He reached up with his free hand and grasped the amulet firmly.
Alex here, he declared, knowing that despite the wind and all the other sounds of battle around him, his words would be easily understood by the other amulet bearers. What gives?
So, you're still alive, a thick voice replied. Guess I should have known. I couldn't possibly be that lucky.
Under the gruff words, Alex knew he heard relief. He smiled. Draven tried so hard to keep up that tough guy front, but Alex had known him long enough to know what type of man he really was. The warden director was one of the best, and Alex knew the Institute would need him in the years to come. It had been a very close call for Alex. That huge black dragon had laid waste to entire areas around Buckingham Palace, and despite just about surviving the fall with Lord Cranethor, he still had an intense fight on his hands to get back to his own troops. He had to admit to himself that if it wasn't for the SAS and their captain, he might not have made it. Now, if Wren and Colin and the rest were also safe, the Council would have escaped direct harm, a borderline miracle. Not only would that be a huge relief, it would also certainly make cleaning up after the fighting a lot easier. As if answering his thoughts, a new voice chimed in. Colin, alive and well and pleased to report that the same may not be true for our opposition. The diplomacy director had been staying close to the Institute itself, which had included pitching in for the organization's defense whenever it was directly attacked. And it had been attacked plenty, Alex knew. The men and women stationed there had gone whole days with little to no rest and near constant assaults at the height of the war. Fortunately, it seemed as if those days might at last be over.
Victoria here,
the thin director of scholars reported. She had also remained within the Institute, her team working to uncover anything that could help turn the tide against Saktar and his Dark Elf horde.
Wren, present.
Alex heard the Spellsword Director declare as well, and he breathed a sigh of relief. She had been the Executive Council member he'd been most worried about, both because he was closest to her and because she had disappeared without a word several days ago. Then a deep, rich, less frequently heard voice called out,
Report. How goes the war?
So,
The prince was not only alive, but directly involved in and concerned for the Institute's well-being, Alex thought. That was a very reassuring surprise.
Good, he answered at once. Surprisingly so. If you'd asked me an hour ago, I'd have said we were dead and gone. But something changed between then and now. Something big. Whatever it was, it's taken the fight right out of them.
It's Saktar, Prince Robert responded. He is dead, and Iktid has fled. The dark elves are leaderless.
Alex nodded, but then realized none of them could see him. I suspected as much. The Royal Guard pretty much gave up, and I came across one of his cousins, Cranathor. He seemed somewhat put out. What happened?
A thought struck him.
Is that where you and Wren disappeared to?
Something like that, Wren replied, though we did have some significant help.
It was clear she wasn't telling them everything as she continued,
but that is good news. We had hoped Saktar's death would have an immediate effect upon his troops, and I'm glad to know we were right.
Still a ton of the fiends around, Draven grumbled. But yeah, my teams are mainly doing clean-up now. Once we've cleared all the Dark Elves out of London, we can repair any damage and then do a large-scale mind wipe. No one will remember a thing about all this.
We will need some sort of cover story for those who died, Colin pointed out. A natural disaster, perhaps, or some random act of violence. I will come up with an appropriate scenario.
Draven grumbled at that. Good luck, Colin. There are so many dead, you'll have to work out something particularly nasty.
Alex smiled grimly at that. They were fast getting back to their normal bickering, always a good sign. In this case, however, he did want something reviewed on Institute policy.
I'm not sure we should do a total mind wipe.
The SAS I worked with were integral to defeating a powerful enemy. I'm interested in looking into the combination of unseen magic with standard military weaponry. His comment was met with a pause, but then the prince spoke up.
An interesting point, Alex, and something definitely worth checking out. Any other things we need to take up?
Alex heard Victoria's voice come through, high and slightly reedy.
Assuming we're not annihilating all Dark Elves in retaliation, we will need a treaty with them. We will begin researching past treaties at once.
Pass them to me once you have them, Colin requested. I can have something drawn up by the end of the day tomorrow.
I will be back shortly, and will have my spell swords round up any remaining troublemakers, Wren stated. There are always a few who will be eager to keep fighting, even after they've clearly lost.
We'll help with the roundup, Alex offered. We can coordinate our efforts.
Very good, Robert said. Thank you all for your loyalty and your hard work. It means a great deal to the Institute and to me.
The prince sounded different somehow, and it took Alex a minute after the magical meeting ended to put his finger on it. He had sounded more relaxed. There had always been something about the prince, a fierce drive, but one towards something else. Something that kept him distracted and impatient to return to it. Now that seemed to be gone. At least, that was how it had felt. Alex wondered what exactly had happened. But for now, he was just thrilled to know that Saktar was finally dead, and that the war really did seem to be over. With that, Alex let out a triumphant whoop of pure joy as he wheeled his great eagle about and urged it forwards to rejoin the rest of his team. There was still a great deal of work for them to do.
Chapter 38 I Have a Plan.
Ben was amazed when he heard the story of how Charlie and Natalie had rescued his parents and Joshua's dad. And then Charlie brought us straight to the throne room, Ben's dad finished. A look of concern crossed his face. The place was so far beyond destroyed we didn't know what to think. We came here as fast as we could, following Natalie and Charlie, who somehow remembered the way. Ben's mum was still hugging him and showed no sign of letting up.
You did it, she whispered to him, eyes shining with pride. You really did it.
Thanks. Ben couldn't stop smiling. He pried himself away from his mother, finally, and practically threw himself at Charlie and Natalie. They hugged each other and laughed, each trying to talk at once. Finally stepping back, Ben grabbed Charlie by the shoulders.
You are, no kidding, the best friend anyone could ask for. I might even tell my gran to stop picking on you now.
Charlie gave a laugh that sounded only partly forced. I don't know if I can face her yet, Ben. The void and demons are one thing, but the beast from beyond? I'm not so sure. They all laughed again. Natalie was beaming, her cheeks rosy and eyes bright.
I bet you'd be fine, Charlie, she said, and he shrugged.
Ben looked briefly at his best friend, who hadn't even turned red. Any sort of self-consciousness Charlie might have had around Natalie seemed to have vanished with their recent adventure. Escaping near-death experiences could evidently do wonders to one's confidence. Then Natalie distracted Ben by throwing her arms around his neck for just a second, before pulling away self-consciously.
I'm so glad you're okay, she said quickly, almost breathlessly.
She gave him a quick kiss on the cheek before scowling and punching him on the arm.
Don't ever do that again.
I won't, Ben agreed, laughing and rubbing at the sore spot. He hadn't thought about girls in a while, but as he looked at Natalie now, he thought just maybe.
I couldn't if I tried, he added, gesturing at his side. See? No more sword.
The others all gaped at that, so he quickly explained how the armor had vanished and Prince Robert's explanation as to why.
That makes sense, Ben's mum agreed. Elizabeth always knew that something that powerful could only come at a hefty price or with a whole lot of strings attached. The High Council wouldn't want to let an artifact that powerful get out of their control.
Prince Robert and Ren approached, and there was another small reunion. Ben was pleased to see his parents reunited with Ren, who was not only their boss, but also their friend. Josh's dad had gone straight to him, of course, but now they'd joined the rest of the group, with Abigail as well. Ben couldn't help feeling a little sad, though, when he thought about the two friends who weren't able to celebrate the victory with them.
We'll need to find Krobeg's dad, he mentioned to his friends. He needs to know that his son didn't make it, and that he died a hero.
The others nodded, especially Charlie and Natalie. He would be grieved to learn of Krobeg's death, of course, but it would mean a lot to him to know that he had fulfilled the duty of the Silver Dwarf once and for all. He would be a legend among his people.
We will give him a hero's burial, Prince Robert promised, and Dagmar as well.
He smiled down at Ben, seeming more relaxed, less driven than he had before.
And we'll find a way to honour the rest of you as well, but without giving away the secret of the Guardians and the armour, just in case.
We'll also clear up that little misunderstanding before you left, Ren promised with a wink.
That made Ben and Josh breathe more easily. They'd been caught trying to sneak away and charged with desertion. If not for Natalie, they'd still be in cells beneath the Institute right now.
The Institute?
Ben smiled, thinking about the school. Now that the war was over, they could return there, but this time he'd have his parents there with him. How cool was that? His thoughts turned to the lessons that had been interrupted by Sektar's attempt at conquest. Classes might seem a little dull after all their recent excitement, but right now, a little dull sounded just grand. And soon enough, Ben knew that he, Charlie and Natalie, and the others would be graduating and becoming full-fledged Institute members in their own right. He smiled at both of them. Natalie flushed, which made Ben feel a bit warm as well, but she did smile back. It didn't take long to get out of the palace and its surrounding area, and then make their way up a short hill to a clearing where Ren and the prince had tethered two enormous golden dragons. The dark elves they passed were more interested in tending to their wounded than tangling with a band of Institute members, and no one followed them. Natalie immediately ran up to one of them, squealing.
Oh, you brought her! She's as beautiful as ever!
Ren smiled as she put her hand on the magnificent beast. When we first suspected where you were, the prince commandeered them. It was our only chance of getting here in time. Ben had never seen anything so fantastical, and even though Natalie had told him about the majestic creatures, seeing them firsthand was something else entirely. The sun was near to setting now, so everyone agreed it made sense to eat something and then sleep. First thing in the morning, they would head straight back to Taesia. After dinner, the adults gathered around a fire to discuss matters, which was fine with Ben. He and his friends seated themselves around a merry little fire of their own, each of them sporting a flask of hot tea. Ben had been amazed with the harness on Ren's dragon. Not only did it look ridiculously comfy and have enough space for multiple people, It also had flaps on either side that could contain food and drink for long-distance travelling. Abigail was sitting close to Joshua, while Ben sat with Natalie to his left and Charlie to his right, and Ben couldn't help smiling. He could tell that they all had a feeling of relief and relaxation that none of them had felt for a long time. Even so, he knew that he had best make good use of this time. He looked around and quietly drew his spell shooter, pointing above them. With hardly any effort, he fired a spell into the air, creating a small, invisible dome that would give them some privacy. Natalie noticed immediately and straightened up. "Ben, what's happening?" She looked around, worry creasing her forehead. Ben put a hand on her arm to calm her. "It's all right. I just wanted to talk. And stop looking around like that, Charlie. It makes us seem suspicious." Charlie whipped his head back around to Ben in an entirely obvious way. "Sorry. I mean, sorry." Joshua and Abigail hadn't said anything, but Ben could see they knew what he was up to. "It's about the armor. I didn't tell the prince or Wren exactly what happened." Charlie's eyes opened a bit wider than usual, and Natalie arched an eyebrow. Ben went ahead and filled them in, not leaving out any of the details. His best friend sat back when he was done, leaning against a large tree.
"Honestly, Ben, it couldn't just be over, could it? I mean, we just flew dragons across the world, invaded a hostile country, freed prisoners, and took out the most powerful elf in the Unseen Kingdoms. Is it too much to hope that we could have maybe a few days to pretend we're just normal apprentices in the Institute of Magic?"
His delivery was so melodramatic, Natalie started giggling, and Abigail joined in. Ben smiled too, and was glad to see even Joshua slap Charlie good-naturedly on the back. Charlie was chuckling too, shaking his head at it all, and for a minute they just enjoyed the moment. When that finished, they turned their attention back to Ben, waiting expectantly for him to continue.
"Here's what I'm thinking," he told them. "Charlie, when we get back, you find all the info you can on this Wilder. We need to know as much about it as possible. Natalie, I think you might have more luck looking into extremely powerful elves and elven lore."
He looked at Joshua and Abigail, eyes intent. "The three of us might end up going on a few scouting trips as needed to follow any leads." He ran his hand through his messy hair, his mind focusing hard on the various possibilities.
"I've been thinking about it for the last few hours, and I've come up with a really good plan."
They all groaned, and Natalie threw a clump of grass at him.
"What?"
he yelped.
Joshua got up and launched himself at Ben with a shout of, "Bundle!"
They all piled on top of Ben as he tried to scramble away, thinking that he was pretty sure this wasn't how leaders were usually treated, but he couldn't stop himself from laughing along with them. They left early the next day as planned. Ben was seated on one of the dragons with his mum and dad, Natalie and Charlie. He saw his other friends close by, flying easily alongside as they sped back towards Tasia and the Institute. There would be plenty of other adventures, Ben suspected, but there would be quiet times as well. He was looking forward to exploring more of the Unseen Kingdoms when he could stop and look around, enjoying the sights for a change. Someday, Iktid would return, Ben was certain. When he did, he would find the Royal Institute of Magic ready and waiting for him. Still, that was a problem for another day. Ben hugged his parents again, smiled at his friends, and just enjoyed that they were alive and well and together. Against all odds, somehow, they had done what Queen Elizabeth had set out all those years ago, and for the first time since his parents had vanished on that horrible day years ago, his life felt whole again.
You have been listening to The High Council, Book 6 of the Royal Institute of Magic, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Leighton Kloss Limited. Production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, find more just like it by visiting audfans.com, the premier audiobook discovery service that brings tailored recommendations direct to your email. That's audfans.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.